This is the John Gambling Show on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Now, with New York's only local News Talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
We continue. Yes, good morning, everybody. 9 minutes after 8 o'clock. Mayor Michael Bloomberg in Studio 4. It's been busy in here.
Been busy, but summer is coming.
I mean, beaches open up this
beach
weekend.
Is open. Governor's Island opens up. A lot of things going on.
Got a lot of big boats out here in the Hudson River.
Yes, we have Fleet Week here. Only sad thing is a Marine got killed in crossing the street the other day. Prayers go out to his family. It's very tragic. A young guy dedicating his life to helping the country, keeping us safe.
Yep. But
a chance to say thank you to the sailors and Marines and Coast Guard who are here.
I'm assuming you'll be participating in Memorial Day parades?
Memorial Day parades on Monday, and then off to Brazil for 3 days for the C40, which is an organization of 40 big cities. Myself, Bill Clinton, and Bob Zelick, who runs the World Bank.
Where are you going, Rio?
São Paulo. Last year it was in Hong Kong. This year it's going to be in São Paulo. Brazil is one of the stars of the economy around the world. And this is,
some argue that it is, at the moment, the hottest economy in the world.
It's certainly one of the most expensive, everybody says. It's very expensive. We have a lot of Brazilians that live here. You see a lot of yellow shirts and the big football or soccer, what we would call soccer fans. But I'm looking forward to that. And you get a chance to see what other cities are doing to clean up their air and reduce congestion and reduce their budgets and all of that sort of stuff.
They might be interested in what you have to
yeah,
say.
Yeah, I mean, everybody.
No, because their big cities have a chronic crime problem. And
Although, no matter how low crime is, you still have the problem and you still got to keep fighting. Everybody says, now that crime is so low here, you don't have to do certain things wrong. The reason crime is low is we keep doing those things. And Commissioner Kelly and all the members of the NYPD really have done a great job. It's going to be interesting. There are meetings and seminars and, with 40 cities, about half of them will have mayors there, and almost all will have either the mayor or deputy mayor.
Are things accomplished?
Yeah, in this organization, yes, and we have just combined the C40 with the Clinton Climate Initiative. It's part of Clinton's global initiative. But we've taken all of those people and combined them in terms of working together. And it's going to be, Clinton was, and I gave an interview yesterday to a reporter, and we did it by phone. I was at City Hall. He was in his office on 125th Street. And Bill and I were talking before the reporter got on. And he said he was 15th floor or whatever it is, looking south. And he said it was just amazing to him the number of buildings in New York City who now have their roofs painted white. Simple painting it white saves 20% of your energy bill in most buildings.
And I've never quite understood, anybody that flies knows that most buildings, houses otherwise, have dark-colored roofs.
It does, because nobody ever thought about it before. But now people are, their budgets are tough. Cost of energy keeps going up. Good look at the price of oil. It's not the only thing. And a lot of energy is generated from coal and from natural gas. But it all sort of goes together. And there's simple things like that you can do. I was at we had an event the other night for Bette Midler's organization. Remember, she's the impetus behind planting 1 million trees. We're up to 500,000 trees already in the ground. Trees clean the air. They take the crap out of the air, just the natural way a tree works. But they also improve property values dramatically. And you drive down, now you can really see it. In the winter, it's a little hard to see because the leaves aren't on trees. But more and more streets in New York City have a median with trees down the middle. It just helps property values. It's just one of the great investments you can make. And there are a lot of those kinds of things, converting to fluorescent bulbs from incandescent bulbs makes a very big difference in the amount of energy. And some of that stuff's going to keep growing. It's, if you talk to people about 50 years from now in global warming, their eyes glaze over. If you talk to them about the fact that their kid may go to the hospital with an asthma attack because of the pollutants in the air, or the water they drink might not be as clean as it could be, or they can't get a job because the congestion's too bad in some places and companies just aren't expanding, then all of a sudden it becomes much more real. And people, you know, in the end, as Diana says, it's about housing and jobs. My house, my job. And, you know, when you bring it home, now, if you want to worry about some things, you look at the tornadoes and the droughts and the hurricanes, and there's a lot of stuff around the world, whether it's a short-term phenomenon, a long-term phenomenon, you can let the scientists can worry about it, although most scientists are all in unanimity in this day and age. But in terms of you and me, painting your roof white or a green roof, which is, in all fairness, more expensive and harder to do because you have to build stuff and have drainage and all that. But painting it white's easy. Changing your light bulbs is easy. Turning out the lights before you go out, turning off your air conditioner in the summer. Leaving your air conditioner running all day long when there's nobody at home is just, you're just taking money and throwing it out the window. You can do that. It's your money, but eventually you're going to say, wait a second, I'd rather spend my money on...
Along these lines, 30 years ago, back in the early 80s, I bought a house that happened to have been built then, and that's, of course, when we were going through the throes of another energy crisis and financial crisis.
Yep.
This particular house had built into it solar hot water. And it works absolutely phenomenally, even here in the New York climate. And I don't understand, and I've been preaching this for those 30 years, why we don't
make... Are you a tree hugger now?
No. Let's not get carried away too far here.
but it proves my point. When it comes down to your house, your job...
It's a dollars and cents thing. I mean, for $1,000... You could put in less, and if you did it on the scale that I'm talking about for everybody, that price would drop instantaneously. Put it on every single new house that gets built.
Well, there was a story yesterday out. General Electric has a new thin film solar panel, which is very close to the holy grail in solar. And that is to be able to, when you count the capital costs of buying the solar panel, because there's no ongoing, some maintenance, but fundamentally no ongoing costs, having solar be cheaper than fossil fuels. And if it could get down there, and the technology just keeps getting better, and if this is sort of at right there, but the next one will be better and better, then you really can use solar. And solar, you say, well, there's no sun at night. That's true. But if you reduced the need to burn natural gas or coal during the day because you had solar, it just cuts that amount out of it. And in some cases, you can actually store energy in batteries.
Well, see, I think this is where we're sort of off mark here a little bit, but I think this is where the next technology is big breakthrough. Battery technology. If you can figure out how to store 110 volt energy, man, I got to tell you, you got it licked.
Well, that's the cars and an awful lot of things.
Even at homes, you know.
Absolutely. But battery technology, it keeps, you know, there's a lot of venture capital going into this. They've made a lot of progress. Some of the things aren't quite where you need them to be. But listen, they're selling a lot of battery cars.
They're selling them, but yeah.
Well, they're selling tens of thousands, and I know it's not millions, but, you know, people.
Are you going to argue better than nothing?
Yeah, sure. I mean, and these people think that, you know, they like it. Nobody's forcing them to do it.
That's exactly right.
In the end, you got to make it attractive to do good, if you will. I've always thought with the philanthropy. In the end, the selfish argument that I feel good when I do something for somebody else, if it gets you to do it, that's fine. What's nothing wrong with that? Why should you not feel good about helping somebody?
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Mr. Mayor, sit tight here. Let me take a break, make a buck or two for the company, and remind everybody, if you've got a question for the mayor, 800-321-0710. 22 minutes after 8 o'clock here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg on a Friday. We got a bunch of folks on the lines here, but we got a couple open, 800-321-0710. Got to get to it, the budget situation, firehouses, teachers, where are you on this?
We have to have a budget by the end of June, which is, you know, 5-odd weeks. We will have a budget on time. We will have a signing ceremony. Kiss, kiss, shake hands. And
is everybody going to be unhappy?
You know, it's the old thing. If any one person is ecstatic, it means there's somebody who's desolate. You want everybody to be convinced that it's the best you can do and that everybody's got something and that you didn't hurt the key services for the city. Make no mistake about it, tax revenues are right where we predicted them to be. There are some worrisome signs in the economy nationally. Most economists would tell you it's not coming roaring back. We're not creating jobs. New York City's actually doing better. We lost...
It's been softer for longer than most people thought.
Yes,
right?
And I'm getting a little bit worried because when I talk to you, in every restaurant I go to, I always talk to the owner about what
business...
And
you've been doing this a long time, right?
Yeah, in the last month, things have slowed down a little bit. Now, whether it's just 4 weeks or what, our tourism hotel is still strong. But it's not running away on the upside, so we're not going to have more revenue than we had counted on. There's always some noise in the data. You underestimate, you overestimate, but fundamentally, it looks like we know what we have, and we're going to have to find some ways to spend less. And, if you could come to an agreement with find another revenue source, find ways to avoid some expenses, then you can change around what you do. So when you say what's going to happen with whether it's teachers, and it's not firehouses, incidentally, it's companies that generally you would close. Keep in mind.
What's the difference?
Let's say you have a ladder and a truck in one house.
Okay.
You still have the house open, so you know the engine that puts the water on the fire.
Gotcha.
The engines put water on fires, ladders get people out and vent the fire, rescue trucks are there to get the firefighters out. That's just oversimplification, but in people say, well, what does each do? That's sort of a good way to look at it. And we have fewer cops, but crimes at record lows. We have fewer firefighters, but deaths by fire, record lows, and response times are the best they've ever been. We have fewer teachers. Graduation rate's higher than it's been in modern days. Our job is not to spend as much as we can. We can't do that. We just don't have the money. The taxpayers don't want to spend any more. Our job is to provide the services with less. And, in fact, we've cut about $5 billion over the last few years, recurring, not just one-shots, real recurring costs out of the agencies like all of those. And if in the last 10 years, all agencies except education, if you add them all together, the total expenses have grown by 28% in 10 years, with inflation going up 33%. So we've actually spending in real dollars less, which is great. We're supposed to do this efficiently. People expect you to keep worrying about costs, and we're doing that. Education is up 105%. Why? Because when we came into office, the teachers were leaving for Nassau County and dramatically underpaid, and you couldn't recruit them. Today, we are much more comparable with regionals, and, you know, teachers want more money. Everybody wants more money, but in the context that we're talking about, we have made a big difference there. And teachers, remember, also get on average 3.5% raise every year that's built into their contract. It's sort of some years it's bigger, some years it's smaller, but over an average long career, they get a raise of about 3.5% a year. The big problem is that our pension system has gone up 515% in 10 years. Now, those are people say, oh, well, you know, it's because you've given higher salaries. A very small percentage of it. The percentage of pension and health benefits as a percentage of salaries has gone up every single year. So it's not just the salaries may increase may make it worse, but it's the benefits that have been given basically by Albany. And this is why, Governor Cuomo's got to help us in terms of cutting some of these unfunded mandates. Cost of education is going to go up.
I talked with him about that this week. I spoke to the governor.
Hopefully he said that he's going to cut.
The mandates were on his agenda, yeah.
Sure,
absolutely.
Because, we and all the other counties in the state have to pay all this stuff. Our Department of Education's budget is going to go up $500 million a year if we do nothing, just because of the mandated increases.
I know you saw the statistics. We spend in the state of New York $18,000 per student, and we graduate that's the highest in the country, and we graduate 73.5%, which is 39th in the country.
Yeah, and it's not clear how good, you know, a lot of those kids when they get to two-year college or four-year college need remedial work. So
they're not really graduating with a skill.
Look, it's better than nothing, and it's two steps forward, one step back. Nobody
are we spending too much then, aren't we, or not getting the result for our dollar?
People will argue that sometimes too much money keeps you from cutting programs that don't work. And one of the hardest things in government is to stop things that aren't working, because there's a big constituency to keep spending. The people that deliver the service want to get paid, keep their jobs. People that all programs do some good, they want to continue. But if in the private sector, you would move your resources away from programs, you'd cancel a product line that wasn't selling and put your sales force over to work on selling the product line that is selling. In government, you go in the other direction to some extent. You don't want to overstate that, but there is certainly some of that. So, and we should always question, why are we spending $18,000 and having 39th in results? And, it's
complicated.
It's always complicated. There's federal laws, there's state laws. If you want to, we've got to do more with less. We cannot continue to increase education at 105%. But as I said, our education costs are going to go up $500 million this year, $500 million. And that's not changing anything. That's just the increase in the mandates. I'm sympathetic with the state and their budget, but they did cut us 100% in revenue sharing and all the other counties outside of New York 3%, and they cut $800 million in education funds. The federal government cut us for $850 million, but that was a stimulus thing that nobody really expected was going to go on. But the state, we still send all our money up to the state, and they're sending us less. So if we have to cut back on education, I'm sorry. We put $2 billion more of city taxpayer money into education in this next budget, and it still isn't enough. We still have to find a ways to either come up with another revenue source or downsize, and that's just the real world.
All right. More with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, 23 before 8 o'clock, with me, John Gambling, at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Ken Moreno, Frank Mata, the two cops acquitted on the rape charges yesterday.
Acquitted, but convicted of, I think, something like conduct unbecoming, which the police commissioner has decided is something that he should terminate their employment right away. I think their pensions as well. I'm not sure of that.
I thought that was
not
you
sure.
Do that.
Maybe I'm not sure. That's why I'm not sure whether you can.
Which doesn't seem right.
Regardless, whatever the law is, the law is. But certainly fired them right away, and what we have to deal with is whatever the jury decided.
Of course.
And that's it.
Yeah, we had this discussion earlier this morning. I mean, you can second guess the jury till the cows come home, but they listen to the evidence, and that's what the decision that they came up with. Question this morning on charter schools. There is a charter school that is closing after 8 months. Financial issues, yep, as well as leadership issues.
Charter schools in the city have done much better.
Can anybody open a charter school?
No, there's a whole procedure you have to go through. My vague recollection is there's two ways that you have to, two different approval methods. One's through the state university. Another one is some other ways through the regents or something. But, not every charter school is going to be right. And here's a charter school. After 8 months, if it's not working, you close it. There's nothing magical about, we're not going to continue with schools. And you look at this people fighting to keep schools from closing. We want to close a bunch of schools. Closing's not quite the right word, because we reopen in the same building a new school, but with new management, new teachers, new whatever. And there's one school that everybody's fighting to keep, 9% proficiency in math, 3% proficiency in English, and people want to keep the school going.
But there were parents in those neighborhoods that fought back yesterday or pushed back yesterday.
I saw that.
With a demonstration against those that want to do that.
You know, it's a lot of these charter schools go to the places with the greatest pedagogical problems. That's what you want, because that's where you really want to focus these kids. If you leave them behind now, they're behind for the rest of their lives. And it's great that people are willing to do that. Teachers are willing to go and work there, work as hard as they can there. And, you know, it's one of the toughest teaching jobs, and they're making a big difference. And then some people don't want progress, and they don't want to measure. How can a teacher know whether the child is learning if you don't ask the child, find out whether the child's learning? Well, that's what's called a test. And, you know, tests tell the teacher what things work and what things don't work with that particular student. One size fits all doesn't work in education. It is an individual child looking a teacher in the eye and vice versa and tailoring a program for that child in the context of they've got lots of things to do and lots of kids in the room. But that's what it's all about. And the ways you find out is testing.
The City Time project, I understand, is online. Is that true? Have we completed from what I read?
Virtually 160, I think his number's like 165,000 employees on it. Police department went on it. Every review I've heard, rather than have lots of people pushing paper around, it's online and working. Now we can go back and say why did
problems it, and why it took so long.
Yeah, I mean, there are some things and some combination. There was clearly fraud, and Rose Gilhern is going after that retrospectively, going after what happened in the old days back when. And could we have stopped it, found it? I don't know. You look back, and I keep thinking, you know, if we'd turned left instead of right, but we didn't. There is, when people start projects, you say, why is it so much over budget? Number one, big software projects never get done or takes a long time. We actually did a pretty good job here in the retrospect. The FAA has been unable to get their new air traffic control system in, the IRS, you know, federal level. Some of these programs go on for decades and cost billions and billions of dollars and never really come up with anything. But there is a little bit of that. The projects are so big. A little bit of it, when you start a project, you say, what's it going to cost? Well, until you have money voted to do the project, to study the project, you really don't know how to answer that question, and you have to answer it, but you can't do all the studies, which take a long time and require a lot of expertise, to see how much to get a real estimate of what it's going to cost. Companies do it because they don't have to have the same kind of approval process, but in the public sector, you have to have an approval before you start. So the estimates at the beginning of what these things are going to cost typically are not terribly accurate, and there's probably no solution to that. That's just the real world. Central Park came in at 6 times what it was budgeted to cost. Could they have done a better job? I don't know, but thank goodness they did Central
Nobody
Park.
Nobody remembers.
And then there's something called mission creep. Mission creep is you're building the project, and somebody says, well, we have this data. Wouldn't it be useful to have X? And it's much cheaper to do it now than come back later on. And you say, yes, yes. And that's the responsible thing to do. So the project gets bigger and bigger and does more and more. But if you go back and take a look at the original cost, you say, oh, you're way over. Yes, you are. But it's sort of apples and oranges. The one thing here that there's no excuse for is we didn't catch fraud, which we should have. Some of the other. But having said that, you're right. The project is done. It is working. It will stop fraud, and it will be efficient in terms. And in this day and age, to have a paper-based system when you have 300,000 employees is so ridiculous. You know, for people that say we should not have done this, come on, that's just not the real world.
Let's see here. Marijuana arrests. There are accusations that there are so many of them, and that they are predominantly being done in minority neighborhoods and not in non-minority neighborhoods.
Well, I can just tell you the police department does not have a policy of picking and choosing who. They look for where, and if they can find somebody breaking the law, we're going to enforce the law. There are people, you know, that say you should decriminalize and marijuana, and some states have actually done that. But here we have not done that in New York. That would be up to the state legislature to do if they wanted to. We're going to enforce the law. And, you know, if you break the law and the police, it comes to the attention of the police, they will do what they're paid to do.
Ticket fix. Refuses to go away, that story, it does, that it issue.
As my press secretary, Stu Loza, would say, that story seems to have legs. Does seem to go on. Look, Ray Kelly's on all over it. It's This is embarrassing to the greatest police department in the world, and we're going to go after it. The district attorney is the first step, and he is investigating. And then when he's done, the police department will do their investigation. And nobody wants to have police department without this kind of petty corruption. Nobody wants it more than Ray Kelly. He's as focused on this as anything. It's also got to focus on keeping down crime and protecting us from terrorism. But, you know, we have no tolerance for it. Should never have happened.
It seems to me
and
that...
And it's been apparently been going on for maybe since police departments were started.
Oh, I'm sure. Absolutely
back
so.
Back in the Egyptian days.
Yeah, I'm sure it goes back even further than that for whatever
sure.
reason. But do you think that the that we summons people too much? I mean, this is a theoretical question
else. The allegation here is not fixing parking tickets. Parking tickets are very hard to fix generally because they're given out by traffic agents. The way it works is a traffic agent walks up to your car, has a handheld computer, they scan your registration on the windshield, and once it's in the system, very hard to get it out of the system. So there's probably negligible corruption in that. These are moving vehicle violations where a motorcycle or a police officer in a car pulls you over, and it's done by hand, written things down until they get back to the station, and then it's entered. And it's the allegation here is that before it gets entered, that's when the intervention, if you will, or fixing takes place. And Ray is working at that on that as hard as he can. But these are motor vehicle moving violations, and nobody's alleged that the police were stopping people
incorrectly.
Right. These are people who probably, or at least didn't. You have a right for a day in court to prove you didn't. The tickets that get fixed, you never get to court, obviously. But, probably we're not giving more summonses. If you go through a red light or you speed or something, if a cop, it's dangerous. The law says you can't do it. If you don't like it, get the city council or the state legislature or the federal government to change whatever law is applying.
You have made a very vocal move on the gay marriage question. In the last month or so, you haven't always been this vocal on this. Why now? Any reason?
It's up before the legislature. The assembly's passed a bill. The governor has said very clearly he is in favor of changing the law. I am too. I saw an article saying I didn't speak out before. Well, you can't speak out on everything every day. Thank you very much. But I've always thought it's just not the government's business. An individual religion has a perfect right to define marriage any ways they want, to have marriages in that religious denomination or any ways, yes or no. They can ban alcohol, abortion, gay marriage, anything they want. That's the religious part. The government is not... shouldn't be picking between religions. Government shouldn't look to the Old Testament or the New Testament or the Quran or anything. It should look to the U.S. Constitution. And the Supreme Court has clearly said separate, people say, well, just civil unions. The Supreme Court has clearly said separate and equal is not equal. And I just don't think it's the government's business, John. People want to get married. They should be able to get married to anybody they want, whether you approve of that marriage or not. You don't have to do it. Nobody's forcing you to do it. But we should not take away some people's rights. And I tried to outline, we didn't give votes to non-property holders. We didn't give votes to women. We didn't give votes to blacks and we had separate facilities and different discriminations. We started out this country, we had slavery. And over time, each one of these things, in the end, Americans have gotten together and said it's not fair, it's not right, it's not what America was built on. And so it's not, people have a right to define marriage any ways they want. And in their church, temple, synagogue, mosque, let them do it. But the government should not be involved in telling you who you can marry.
All right, Mayor, we've got a full bank of telephone calls. We will get to those. Did you bring some tweets with you this week?
I did.
All right, we'll get to a couple of those as well as we continue. 11 before 9 o'clock, coming right back. All right, Mr. Mayor, pick up the headphone right there. Let's go to the telephones. We're going to start with line number 5. That is Chris. Chris, you've got the mayor. Good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Mayor, Mr. Gambling. I have two quick questions regarding your cigarette ban.
Sure.
First question is, how do you plan to go after those who are tourists who are actually smoking in public parks and on beaches? And secondly, how far do you expect to go? Are you looking to ban this completely in New York City, all over, outside, completely?
Now, Chris, I've always thought if you want to smoke, you have a right to smoke. I don't think we should take away your right. I think, you know, it's not good for you and it kills you, but if you want to do it, you should be able to do it. The issue is when somebody else is going to breathe your smoke, a secondhand smoke. And in the parks, there are signs up or will be signs up saying, you know, it's not permitted. We don't enforce it in the sense of a cop arresting you, and park rangers probably aren't going to give you most people tickets or on the beach or in the parks. But people will know. And when somebody, you know, these are these kinds of things in restaurants and in offices, they're self-enforcing. And since most people don't smoke or don't want to breathe somebody else's smoke, there's just peer pressure to do it. And, you know, it's worked very well without lots of police stuff. We don't get any revenue from people not smoking. I suppose you could argue that if they don't smoke, they don't pay cigarette taxes. It'd be wonderful if our cigarette taxes went to zero, because a lot more people would live. Life expectancy in this city is up greater than the country as a whole. It's increased 1 year and 7 months in the last 10 years. And a big chunk of that is fewer people smoking, 10,000 fewer deaths.
All right, Chris, thank you very much. Let's see here. Viviana. Good morning, Viviana. You've got the mayor. Go.
Yes.
Hi.
Mayor Bloomberg,
yep.
I respectfully disagree about the change of marriage and redefinition. Our government is set up to also produce stable and strong societies. And for many centuries, marriage between one man and one woman has produced that outcome. You have 2 to 3 million Christian evangelicals. You have Catholics and Muslim communities. Government's supposed to represent them as well.
Yep, it does. Vivian, I couldn't agree with you more. They should have the right to decide whatever they want to do and define marriage any ways they want and have ceremonies the way they want and restrict their congregation's rights to anything that they feel is appropriate. But this country was founded on everybody having the right to have their own religion and let their own religions define that. And if you want to be able to do it in your religion, you have to let other people do it in theirs. In this case, it's just getting the government out of making decisions as to which religion is right. And that's what freedom is all about. And, you know, if two people, I agree with you, through history, we've shown that a lot of people believe, I guess it's fair to say, that marriage is a stabilizing force, that marriage is something that lets parents better raise their kids. You can do it without being married. There's single moms, single dads. But on balance, most people would say marriage is good. And I think, you know, marriage is good doesn't have anything to do with the gender of the two people getting married. It's separate but equal is not equal, the courts have ruled, and everything else. And this is just, seems to me, it's not the government's business. And that's why I think in the end, people who are a little more conservative, who have pushed marriage as something that is desirable for society and have said that government shouldn't impinge on people's freedoms, well, this is doing that. And so we want to, that's why I think it should be changed. But you have a right to your opinions, and in your church, temple, mosque, synagogue, you know, you can set whatever rules you want. Nobody wants to take those away from you.
All right, Bob in Brooklyn, you are next with Mayor Bloomberg. Go.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Earlier, John spoke about too many kids are needlessly going to college, and I believe that no child left behind is definitely leaving thousands behind. Recently, I was the principal for a day at Transit Tech High School, and it was heartwarming to see the pride and the caring that the teachers had for the kids in teaching them electrical work and other vocational trades. But sadly, it seems like this No Child Left Behind is forcing them to shortchange the kids and not give them the hours needed for the practical hands-on experience.
You know, yeah, Bob, when I grew up, the vocational school in Medford, the town outside of Boston I grew up in, was almost as big as the high school. And in all fairness, in my high school, it was in a period not an enormous percentage of the kids went on to college. But in this day and age, in the trades, you can make a very good living. And there was a great op-ed piece, John, you get a kick out of this, in one of the newspapers about 4 weeks ago, on comparing going to Harvard with working in the correctional department in California. It turns out that the correctional department in California is much more selective. They only take 1% of the applicants, whereas Harvard takes 6%. And they went on, it was hysterical, of average compensation and length of vacation.
We had a long conversation earlier this morning on this. It was really interesting.
I think Bob is 100% right. There's nothing magical. The trouble, Bob, was there was a period in, the 70s maybe, when it became fashionable to say, oh, you don't think my kid's good enough to college? You want them to learn how to be a plumber, electrician, whatever? Yeah, well, unfortunately, they would have been better off. And it's there's no one thing for everybody. Plumbers make a good living, and carpenters and electricians and that sort of thing. And just because you go to college doesn't mean you do. On the other hand, more education is good. And if you can go to college, I would recommend it, even if you want to become a plumber or electrician or carpenter.
Ain't going to hurt. Mr. Mayor, have yourself a good Memorial Day weekend.
Thank you. You two beaches open, Governor's Island open, and the weather's going to be good, I think. Monday a little iffy. Parades, too.
9 o'clock.